He cannot disappear.
We hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knee, as Johnny said. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is. No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian Sini. I'm the guy behind NRL Physio on social media. My co-host, James, he's a physio. He's a big footy fan. You're here today, mate. Another smacking win by the Bronx. Huge. Well, every favourite got up this weekend. It was a bit of an easy round for the tipsters. How was your weekend, my friend?
Oh, it was pretty good. So it means we're locked into the top two. And let me just say the Broncos' arrogance is coursing through me. I'm obviously kitted up in them tonight. And the group chat was going pretty heavy on getting grand final tickets, which I know you're a part of as well. I sadly can't attend. I've already got stuff locked in. But they've got a smell of a team that's going to go the distance, Brian. So I'm feeling it in my joints, in my bones. I think this is a team that's ready to roll if we have really good play at nine, which I'm just not convinced of. That's the only thing holding me back from selling my house and putting my house on the Broncos getting the W this year in the comp. What do you reckon?
Mate, Billy scored, what, two tries on the weekend? What more could you want? Like,
I'm still not convinced. I just can't quite get me across the line yet. I can't come around to it yet, but I tell you what, if we go close to winning it, then maybe we will.
But I tell you what, if I'm there on grand final day, it might actually be to take my daughter to go see the Bronx NRLW teammate, because my weekend, look, we talked it up big time. I was going to go watch Pappy on the weekend, but my daughter is really footy mad at the moment. And I was like, I knew she really obviously is loving watching the girls. She says she wants to watch the girls play footy. And I said to her, look, you know, there's two girls footy games on Saturday afternoon. Do you want to go watch it? And that was sold. Like, she was in, and we went down there, and mate, as much as I've got her doing fins up and she loves the Dolphins every time they come on, mate, we went with my father-in-law, who's like a massive Bronx fan, as you know. So he was just in her ear the entire time, and she is full on down the track of the Bronx now. Like, Romy Tightsell, I reckon I'm going to have to go Romy Tightsell in my mixer team soon, because Romy had like fluoro green yellow boots on. And so Isabel was into that. She was Romy this, Romy that all weekend. So, yeah, I reckon if I'm there on grand final day, it'll be to if the Bronx make it the NRLW, that's what I'll be there. I'll be there with Isabel cheering them on, because unfortunately, I
absolutely love to see it.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that the poor old Finns, they might not make it, mate. They might just miss out. So yeah, which is a real bugger.
Yeah, the mathematics might be against them there, but it's exciting to hear. Yeah, the family's getting right on board deep into Broncos territory, mate. It's good to hear. Love it.
Yeah, mate. It was always with half the family there, it was always a risk. But look, mate, let's get into it. We want to talk about the best rugby league fantasy competition. Bundy, the NRL, and the NRLW are back with the world's first mixed-gender fantasy league. I know many of you listening consider yourselves high-level fantasy players. This is going to test your skill, with the stars of the women's game able to be selected for the first time alongside the men. It's a really great way to elevate the women's game. As we all know, fantasy sports drives a significant amount of interest in rugby league, and with the rapid growth of the NRLW, this is the perfect combo. James and I consider ourselves pretty gun fantasy players and big fans of the women's game. So head to mixer.nrl.com to take us on. Enter the special league code for Magic Sponge listeners, which is FUHV1MWR, or head to the link in the podcast description. James, I'm absolutely loving the Mixer this year. I was there scouting players on Saturday afternoon to see if they were, you know, worthy of jumping in my team and taking me to the victories. How have you been liking it so far?
Always enjoying it, Brian. It's always good to have good partnership with Bundy again for the Magic Sponge. But it's a great comp. It's good value. It's just really good to mix things up, as you say, in the Mixer. It's good to get the guys and the girls both involved. I'm enjoying it. The footy's been really good. That was a really good game that you went to on the Saturday. I think I was watching that on the TV. Mate, Cowboys versus West Tigers was one of the best games I saw all weekend. When you see the blowouts that were happening in the boys, but yeah, that was a really, really good game of footy. I've got my eye on a couple of players from that matchup that we'll talk about later as well, so I want to go deep into that.
Love it, mate. All right, guys, let's get in. We've got, this is your one-stop shop for all the injury analysis. You know what we talk about. You know why we're here. We're going to talk injuries. We're going to talk about performance, return time, rehab, and most importantly, Supercoach and fantasy scoring. There's heaps more stuff at patreon.com/NRLphysio. So if you're looking, if you're right up the tippity top of the rankings or you're trying to get into the top 1K, there could be a little injury nugget somewhere in there that could help you get over the top, or if you're in those close head-to-head comps as well, if you need some insight, I'm there for you. patreon.com/NRLphysio. But otherwise, guys, let's get into the injury wrap for round 24.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
The first game from round 24, Brian, was the Manly Seagulls v the Panthers here. Good few that we're going to list off in terms of injuries, but probably not a huge amount of discussion points with them. So to start things off, Ben Trbojevic and Brad Parker, both concussions out of this one. Jerome Luai was ruled out pre-game with an illness. That doesn't sound serious, so he probably will be back fairly quickly. Same goes for Mitch Kenny, who was called a minor hamstring injury, so he should be back relatively soon. Isaac Tungo is due back next week. And the one I just had my eye on when I was watching this game, who didn't look like he was quite at his best, was Stephen Crichton. But I'll let you sort of take the that in my little speculative eyeball test and what I thought about Stephen Crichton to round things off there, home.
Yeah, mate. So Ben Turbo, Brad Parker, pretty straightforward concussions, so they're very unlikely for next week. Jerome Luai, illness. Mitch Kenny with the minor hamstring. Oh, look, I think a lot of this potentially is just Panthers kind of manufacturing a few rests for their guys heading into, into the finals and stuff like that, because it's looking like if we, you know, forecast ahead to round 27, it might be tough for them to rest too many guys because it's looking like they're going to have to beat the Cows to get the minor premiership. So, you know, like potentially they don't care about that, you know, with two premierships and a grand final and minor premiership in the last 3 years, and they're just focused on the premiership. But, I don't know, they strike me as a team who want to, you know, win all the accolades that they can. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're pretty full strength heading into round 27. So they might just try and have a guy rest here or there. Isaac Tungo is a bit of a weird one because, all I'd heard and even kind of a few inside whispers and stuff like that, like he was due back this week. Like he was for sure due back this week. He was named on the extended bench last week, so they were like, 50-50 on it. But then wasn't even named this week. So, you know, I hear again he's due back next week, and I'll believe it when I see it. Those poor buggers, anyone who traded him in sort of, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, they've been absolutely taken for a ride because, you've just lost plenty of good matchups for him and plenty of good scores. And then, yeah, mate, like, I totally agree with you. I thought Stephen Crichton, he definitely looked hesitant in a few different areas, particularly on that intercept and those kind of things. I know you were sort of messaging me and saying, you know, picking up probably on even more than I was. But, yeah, he just didn't look right, hey.
Yeah, again, I'm purely speculating here. I've got nothing harder to work off this apart from just the eye test stuff, Brian. I think just on the intercept where he went coast to coast, he didn't look like he hit full top gear for me there. You know, the double hand put down, he didn't lay out. The second try in the corner, he didn't really want to lay out, but he sort of had to. A few times into contact. So I don't know if we're dealing with like sternum rib thing. He didn't have a sternal plate, or there's no mention of him getting needled up or anything like that. He just didn't quite look like his best when you compare to where he's at for State of Origin. So I think probably just one to keep an eye on there maybe, and he may well be a straight swap for an Isaac Tungo. If Isaac Tungo comes in, Crichton might be one that sort of rests up with the finals in mind there. So I think maybe just keep an eye on that if you're someone that's got him in your super coach teams. We'll move forward to the Sharks with the Titans next, Brian. So two injuries here for the Titans. Kieran Foran with a sternum injury and Sam Verrills with a collarbone concern. That's been very complicated for him, that journey with the collarbone this year, hasn't it? Is that procedure number 3 on that one now? Probably at least he's been very complicated there, hasn't he, Sammy Verrills, poor bugger?
Mate, it'd almost be number 4, I reckon. And like, I just want to use Sam Verrills as a bit of an example, I guess, of, you know, some guys really cop it hard for being injury prone, and, you know, and Sam Verrills is one of them. Like, it seems like every time I post about him, people are like, oh, you know, he's made of tissue paper and you know, all this kind of stuff. But, like, what I want to say about this, like, yes, I recognise he's missed a fair bit and his collarbone, you know, is really giving him trouble. But this is nothing, not about his body type or about, you know, like, something, some sort of predisposition or he hasn't done his rehab well or something like that. He's developed a post-operative infection, which is like a one in, you know, like, I think, what's it, 1%, 2% post-op infections? And then not something only, like that, yeah, and not only is a post-op infection, it's gotten to a point where it's eating away into the bone, like, which, once again, it, you know, that percentage decreases again. So it's literally those kind of things. Like, unless he, and I doubt this is the case, but unless his hygiene wasn't fantastic post-operatively and he didn't look after the wound very well, then it's literally just bad luck. Like, that there could not be anything more than that. But he's then copped, you know, all this crap. Like, I know when he initially kind of had the injury and then was out for longer than expected, I was getting peppered with, where is he, you know? And, like, you know, I kind of copped a little bit for saying that it was going to be 6 to 8 weeks and it ended up being longer. And I didn't know what it was. I was like, look, I'm not really sure here. He'd had the collarbone injury in the past, potentially some complications around that. But obviously it was that post-operative infection. I just want to say that sometimes there's things happening behind the scenes that all of us aren't aware of. And look, you know, you're allowed to say whatever you want as a fan. That's fair enough. But sometimes, you know, something like this, there's literally nothing else the poor bugger could have done. And he's missed the best part of a season for something that's literally a post-operative bad luck. It could happen. It's just as likely to happen to him as it is to happen to anyone. And I know, like, especially working in hospital, you get a fair bit of infection stuff come in. And it literally, sometimes absolutely. It might be hygiene, but I'm sure it's, you know, more just bad luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if any fraction's an open fracture. So if anything's sort of penetrating through the skin or, you know, got that much higher risk of infection. But some people are just dead unlucky. It's just, you know, you just get bad luck and that's just the way it goes, unfortunately. But I'm trying to remember the timeline of Sam Verrills Bryan. Sorry, I'm just going off the top of my head here. But was he a collarbone fracture at the Roosters and then he went to the Titans? And I think he refracture pin and plate? And now he's revision of that pin and plate and bone graft or something like that. So he might be up to procedure number 4 or intervention number 4. Like you said, it's just been a really complicated journey. And it's one that we speak to a lot with collarbones as well. We talk about the risk of non-union. We talk about the risk of what happens with those, with the plates that they use there, how hard it is to fixate. And I guess infection is just one of those ones that you just can't always discount when you're having a surgical procedure, can you? That's just sort of always a risk that you have with any operative intervention, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I think the Titans have been using shoulder clean out surgery fairly liberally here because he had a shoulder clean out in December last year, which, reading between the lines of what the coach was saying this week, I think that he actually refractured it again then. So he's almost had three. So he fractured it at the Roosters. He then either refractured it or the plate came loose early in the preseason.
Early this year.
Yeah. And well, but then he had another one earlier this year. I think it's actually, what I was reading was effectively he's done it 3 times and now he's had this 4th procedure to do the bone graft. So full on, look, at the end of the day, look, thoughts go out to him because that is just an absolute rough run. Not much you can do about it. And then Kieran Foran with the sternum, apparently he had a sternum injury during the week that they were needling up. They were putting the chest padding on. He aggravated it during the game. I mean, this is, you know, textbook what we talk about with sternum rib issues. They're high risk of aggravation. They can stop you in your tracks. Look, this is one of those, and he got asked the question, the coach, in the post-match. They said, you know, do you just shut him down and look towards 24? And it's looking like, especially with them sending Verrills off for surgery, you know, like, do you just go, okay, let's blood some young guys? From the outside looking in, I'd say that's probably the best option. But knowing someone like Kieran Foran, it's just a pain issue. We know what he pushed through with his toe earlier in the year. He could very well just say, nah, I'm playing and deal with it. So, but he's just a high risk of re-injury. I think where this is most sort of relevant is he's obviously huge for Dave Fifita. So I think if you're a Dave Fifita owner, not that I'd ever, you know, be right on the bus of trading Dave Fifita out, but if you find out that Kieran Foran is out for the year, and then you've got, you know, Dave Fifita is worth a fair bit of money, if you've got a mutual, if you're in a head-to-head final and Dave Fifita, you know, is one of your mutual players, that could potentially be a little edge you could get, is trading out Dave Fifita, because you know Kieran Foran's not there feeding him those, you know, those wonderful, like, short balls.
Yeah, got insight on that as well, Brian. We'll move on to the Broncos v. the Eels in this one. So for the Eels, Andrew Davey was a concussion. He had Category 1 symptoms on the field, so he'll miss the 11 days at least. And Mitch Moses looks like a cheekbone fracture there, Brian. What expected time frame is he looking like sitting out?
Yeah, so he'll be, by what we've heard, surgery, and 6 weeks is what they're expecting. He was already, like, we've seen some guys come back with those really minor ones. They can come back in, like, 3 week return to play. So they miss two and come back on the third. But see, even for him there, like, they've got a bye in round 27. That's why I specifically noted it in the post that I initially put out, because we have seen guys come back on that 3 week return to play. But yeah, it doesn't help the Eels because they need him for the next 2 weeks. So they're really going to be up against it trying to make finals now. I think that probably puts them, although I'm a big fan of Dejan Arce, I think he's wonderful, but yeah, I think they needed Moses there.
Yeah, it looks pretty squeezy, doesn't it, despite Dylan Brown coming back in and looking pretty good. The next game there was the Rabbitohs v. the Dragons. So this was up in Cairns. Jed Cartwright and Jai Arrow both listed as back spasms here, Brian. Probably a bit of an update on those two. We talked about Jai last week, actually, with back spasms, didn't we?
Yeah, so Jed Cartwright just got ruled out, I think, pregame with some back spasms. And then the only thing I wanted to mention about Arrow is he was getting worked on, like, during the game. Like, they were obviously aggravating and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's what we spoke about last week. Everybody, I'm sure there were many people out there who were shocked that he played. I posted our conversation on his back spasms from last week's podcast on socials, and had that many people commenting, messaging, being like, there's no way he plays this week, even though we were there saying there's a good chance that he plays this week. But once again, high risk of aggravation. So he did have some aggravation in there. I haven't had time to go and check how his stats were, whether his base stats were up or down or something like that, but this is the risk with back spasms. You can kind of, you know, get them to settle down quickly, but then that risk of in-game aggravation is definitely there.
Yeah, so definitely lower on the output there for Jai Arrow. He scored 40 in total, so yeah, probably a little bit lower than his sort of base output than most weeks gone by there. So yeah, probably has affected the output there fantasy-wise there. He's sort of fairly lowly priced. He has only averaged 48 this year, but his minutes have been fair bit lower in the last week, especially on the back of the back spasms, but then probably this week as well, I dare say, as well. So we can move forward to the West Tigers versus Warriors game next, Brian. Few injuries here, primarily around the Warriors team. So Wade Egan with a throat injury, Sean Johnson with a quad injury that he, I guess, succeeded the goal-kicking boots for this round four, Adam Fanua-Blake with an ankle concern, and then on the concussion front, from last week, we had Chance Hooker-Clockstar and Dane Laurie both with concussions from last week. Do you want to give us a bit of an update on, I guess, the status of those two? Because there's a bit of nuance there that's probably worth chatting about, isn't there?
Yeah, so CNK I find really interesting. Like, we spoke, and obviously it was a pretty big talking point for a lot of people this week about it being his third concussion this season and what that meant and what the history of that was. And we identified the last three players who'd suffered three concussions in the season that ended their seasons. They didn't play again that year. I actually missed a fourth one, and like, rain down on me with insults here, because Alex Tall last year had three concussions.
Oh, mate.
How did I miss that? I don't know.
How
but
did
I,
you miss
yeah,
that?
I know how I missed it was that one was in the in preseason training, and so I hadn't had it recorded. I record all the ones in game, so I had not recorded that preseason training one, but I did find it during the week. So that obviously ended his season as well. He didn't play for the rest of the year. The interesting thing here is everything out of the Warriors, and I've heard a little bit of, you know, that CNK is going to be back next week. So, like, yeah, just to put it in perspective, it's when you say three concussions in a season, for CNK, it's like three concussions in 4 or 5 months, which is, yeah, that's, like, quite significant. So, obviously, as we said, every concussion is different. Every case is different. So he must be doing really, really well for that to be an option to be back next week. But, yeah, I mean, I just really hope he doesn't have a fourth. Like, it's not all about number of concussions and all that kind of stuff, but certainly from a position of sitting on the couch and just seeing these kind of things go down, to sort of have those examples of the last four guys who've suffered three concussions in a season have an extended time period off, to hear that a guy here is going to come back in 2 weeks, it definitely does sort of, you know, it makes you worry about him. And, like, you know, I just, yeah, look, they're not going to send him back out there unless they're, like, have the utmost confidence in him, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I just hope everything works out all right in that space. And then Dane Laurie, I just found that really interesting because, he didn't return after a HIA last week, but then played this week, so... I had a look at the official concussion logs, which usually sort of state if there's an injury or if it's an actual failed HIA. Didn't say anything about an injury, so, and there was just nothing said about it. But to be fair, there was nothing said about Connolly Lemuelu either the week before, except on this show. Like, I think I was almost the only one who seems to care these days, which is, a bit sad, because I go looking for this stuff every week and just no one seems to report on it. And I'm like... maybe I'm the only sicko out there, but I care about how these guys are looked after, and to see those protocols in place, like, I'm sure everything's being followed, but they're definitely cases where you'd love some clarification on what exactly is going on with these guys. I think
it's a good talking point, isn't it, Brian? I guess it does feel a little bit gossipy and a little bit speculative when we sort of talk about it this way, but I think the concerns are pretty real there, especially just because of the difference in how some players seemingly are managed. And I know not everything's the same, but yeah, there seems to be a little bit of differing opinions across club land there. So it's one to sort of keep an eye on for, I guess, the rest of this year, but probably into next year as well, to see what eventuates there. On that point, we've got a few guys listed here from the Roosters and Dolphins matchup there. So,
hang on, mate. Before I'll just hit those other Warriors guys really quickly. None of them seem to be too bad. I think Wade Egan with the throat. He obviously went to hospital, but I think by what they were saying, it was just a precaution. Look, anything around the throat, you know, the airways, stuff like that, you don't want guys, you know, having... And I think it was Andrew Fifita, he got hit. And we've had a few cases of these where they get hit, they seem fine, and then all of a sudden, like 10 or 15 minutes later, they can't breathe because it's just that airway just swells up. They can't breathe. It closes over, and that's really concerning. So they probably just got on the front foot, sent him to hospital just in case anything happened. They wanted him in the best place, but it sounds like he was okay. I did put in the post that he did pass his HIA. I just noted that because I know that Egan has had two concussions already this season. So, you know, any kind of contact around there worth talking about. Sean Johnson with the quad, I think that's an interesting one, especially highly owned in Supercoach circles. There's a very real chance that he doesn't kick for the next week or two. You know, like, this is obviously something that was bothering him enough. Apparently he was feeling it when he was kicking. Now, you hear me a lot, I'll often say, especially guys coming back from, you know, syndesmosis injuries, even hamstring injuries, those kind of things, people are like, are they going to be right to kick? Like, Nathan Cleary was a perfect example. People are like, is he going to be goal kicking? And there's a lot of injuries that I'll say when he's fit, if they're fit to play, they're fit to kick. Two kind of areas where that changes is like quad hip flexor and groin. Like, they're both areas that you can have niggles in, play a game, but not be very comfortable kicking. So that is something where he could be playing the next few weeks, depending on how that quad settles down. You could potentially, you know, be missing out on 10 points a game from SJ goal kicking in the next couple of weeks. So just something to keep in mind. And then Adam Fanua Blake, that was just a little one. When he scored that last try, he came off. I did go back and review the footage. They hosed it down in the post-match. They said, look, I think it's fine, it's just a little ankle. It did look high ankle-y. So, like syndesmosis, he got landed on sort of laterally, the foot turned out a little bit. Now, look, you know, hopefully nothing. It wasn't a great view because they were obviously focusing on the try being scored rather than what was going on back at his feet because he was kind of diving forward. So we didn't get a great view of it. But, yeah, they're always the ones that I just have a little bit of pause with because you can have guys who it seems like nothing, you know, just like we've had guys play out games with those little high ankle sprains and then it turns out to be something once the scans come in. So hopefully nothing to worry about, but he's another guy who's highly owned. So I'm nervous for any owners just for the next couple of days until we hear more news.
Yeah, especially if you're low on trades, that's not exactly what you want to hear for Adam Finnell Blake, who's been unbelievable this year in front row, hasn't he? He's really bounced back this year in fantasy land. All righto, we'll move forward to the Roosters versus Dolphins now. I've jumped the gun there before there, Brian. So probably on the injury front, before we talk about HIAs again, we'll talk about Jerry Marshall-King with the shoulder. Sounds like he's getting shut down for the year with that labral injury. It sounds like that he's been carrying. And then Joey Manu's got an ankle concern. The HIA concussion gents we need to speak to are Hammer, so Tabo Fadoe, Connolly Lemuelu, and Kenny Bromwich this week. And again, there's a little bit of nuanced discussion around these guys, it seems like, as well, which sort of flows on from the Bulldogs game as well, wasn't it, for the Dolphins players as well, where there's a little bit of conjecture about, is this Category 1, Category 2? What are we dealing with? What's the independent doctor say? What does our doctor say? It seems like there's a little bit of a discrepancy there, again, this week for the Dolphins.
Yeah, mate. I think Wayne was in the post-match presser, and I think he got it mixed up because he was kind of having a go. He's like, oh, HIAs, you know, we brought Hammer off, and it was deemed, and he said a grade 2, but then we thought it was a grade 1. And I think it's got to be the other way around because I don't think Wayne would be complaining of an independent doctor underdiagnosing his player. So I think this is a similar sort of thing to Connolly Lemuelu, and he did mention that example again. They've kind of pulled Hammer off for what the independent doctor deemed a Category 1, it sounds like, but then the Dolphins have said it was Category 2, and so it sounds like we're probably going to go through all of this again. Personally, I went back and had a look at the Hammer incident. They didn't stay on him for very much at all. He kind of got hit. He did go down. He didn't seem to have a whole lot of protective action when falling to the ground, but the camera got back onto him. I did count about 3 seconds down the track, and he was up and okay. So, yeah, look, like, obviously we don't have access to all that kind of stuff. I thought the Lemuelu one was probably clearer than the Hamiso Tabuai-Fadoe in terms of, you know, potential concussion signs. But at the end of the day, we say it all the time, I'll say it again, Category 1 signs are like clear signs of concussion, clear, obvious signs of concussion. If you get deemed Category 1, it's like, yes, you've suffered a concussion. You've been sparked, I think, is the you know, what a lot of the footy players like to say. And even though you then are okay by the time you get to the sheds and those kind of things, and this hasn't come from, the NRL hasn't made this up, this is from the international sporting bodies. They all get together at this symposium and they come up with these things. So this is all sports. They all have come up with these criteria. So, yeah, like, it's just, I think railing against Category 1, you can rail against particular decisions and be like, you know, that particular decision, we didn't agree with it because of this, this, and this, and that's fine. But once again, I hate people sitting there and sort of saying, oh, you know, they can't diagnose it from the bunker, you know, a million miles away. It doesn't matter. The Category 1 is clear signs, and that is used worldwide by many sports. I won't rant too long. That's it. Jeremy Marshall-King with his shoulder. Yeah, look, we've spoken, I mean, it seems like every week about him. It looks like that will, and this cost me, mate. I lost to you, I just checked before he came on. I lost to you in our draft comp, and Jeremy Marshall-King got me 20, and I dropped to the bench Blake Brayley, who scored like 100, and I lost to you by less than that difference. So, God damn it, Jeremy Marshall-King. I should have listened to my own injury analysis, mate. But he'll be gone for the year. Wouldn't be surprised if he needs surgery. Minimal concerns with him. If he gets the surgery early enough, he should be fine heading into round one next year. And then Joey Manu with the ankle, he just carried a bit of a niggle, but by all accounts, it wasn't anything major.
Very good wrap up there, Brian, and also sucked in on Jeremy Marshall King costing you a win against me. Commiserations on that one, champion. We're going to move forward to the Storm versus Raiders. No injury concerns of that one, Brian. So we're going to go to Knights v Bulldogs to round off round 24. Jackson Hastings had a syndesmosis injury. This was in the hip drop tackle with Jacob Weston earlier in the game, there early in the half. It looks like the same ankle that he sustained that high-grade syndesmosis injury against the Broncos last year, sort of similar time of the year, actually. It wasn't sort of round 18-ish or round 20-ish last year as well, because I know it cost Paddy Carrigan 4 or 5 weeks on the sideline there. So what's your initial thoughts on Jackson Hastings, and what's the word out of the Knights there on his prognosis?
Yeah, mate, I think this is an interesting one for people. You know, there'll be plenty of Knights fans out there who are really, you know, onto this because he's a big player for them. He's been great for them this year. I'll start out with the bad news. Everything looks quite concerning in terms of the mechanism was quite traumatic. There was, you know, a lot of force coming down from Jacob Preston's body onto his ankle. His foot got stuck in the turf. It got turned pretty violently. He was in a lot of pain. So he was in a boot post-match. He couldn't really weight bear all that well. Then Adam O'Brien came out post-match in the presser and said, look, it's not looking good. He's getting scans. All of these things point towards a moderate to high-grade syndesmosis injury requiring surgery with 6 to 8 weeks recovery, which would just be, yeah, an absolute dagger for the Knights. Now the good news. I can give you a sliver of hope that I couldn't give to a lot of players. So say this was, say, a Kalen Ponga, who has no history of syndesmosis injury, has no history of injury in that ankle. And I had a lot of people ask me, because this is the same ankle, does it make him more susceptible to ankle injuries in the future? It does. So he is more susceptible to those kind of things. But the thing is, because he has that, he's got a plate on his fibula there, so a metal plate with screws. He also has the tightrope holding his syndesmosis, his high ankle together. He also would have a whole lot of scar tissue in and around that ankle because he had quite significant injury last time. He had a quite significant surgery. All of those things can be aggravated quite significantly without too much damage, but it can cause a shitload of pain and a lot of swelling and seem really debilitating, but pull up all right. And a really good example of that was Viliami Kikau. I think it was probably 2 preseasons ago. He had one of the more violent high ankle sprain mechanisms that I've seen. And at the time I was like, oh, he's cooked. He's in big trouble because it was really traumatic. On someone like, once again, a Kalen Ponga, who has no history there, I'm like, the only thing that's going to hurt is your high ankle ligaments. So you're cooked. You're in big trouble. Because Kikau had a previous surgery there, it just stirred up a whole lot of scar tissue and aggravated the, I think he had a plate in there as well. He was back within 2 or 3 weeks and playing, because all he needed to do was stay off it, let it settle down, and then build it back up. So the actual damage wasn't that bad. So look, it's not looking fantastic for him, but this could, this is going to be a coin flip in terms of, I still would sit on the end of there being a syndesmosis injury that requires, you know, quite a recovery period, but there is hope. Because as I said, if this happened to Kalen Ponga, I'd be having a real dour conversation with the listeners and just being like, right off the season, he's in big trouble. But Hastings has some hope. It, depending on what the scans come back with, it could just be in, you know, that plate that's on his fibula could have just been shifted or aggravated. The screws can, it can be really, really painful without there being too much damage. So if you're a Knights fan, go to bed tonight, tomorrow night, with all your fingers and toes crossed that that's all it is. But I guess I'm here to say there is some hope. It's not much hope, but it's at least something.
Yeah, definitely get the prayers out for the rugby league gods there for Jackson Hastings or any other gods that you subscribe to as well, just to get him across the line, hopefully, for the Knights. He's been really good for them this year, hasn't he, Jackson Hastings? Been a great pickup. We're going to wrap up the round by going to the NRLW now, Brian. So we're just going to go through a few injuries here. I'll quickly list them off for you. So Elsie Albert looks like a calf aggravation. Kelsey Clark was an ACL injury from last week. Talisha Harden was a knee injury at the game. You would have attended, see the mechanism there. There wasn't too much on the TV. It didn't really look too much like an ACL. It almost looked like a like an impact injury to the lateral aspect of her knee potentially. And then we've got a few HIAs and concussions list off. So Rhea Butler, Jamie Chapman, Lauren Brown, and Riley Jorgensen were all listed as HIAs as well. Where do you want to start with the NRLW, Brian? I'll let you rip and tear into those injuries for the NRLW.
Yeah, go straight to Elsie Albert, calf aggravation, straight out of the textbook. She suffered it in the NRLW preseason, was going to be back round one, no, was going to be back round two, no, was going to be back round three, no, you know, typical calf just lingering around. She's finally back round four and then re-injures it. Even though the calf re-injury rate isn't all that high, it is elevated when you have that kind of, you know, progression of, like, yeah, it just, it took her a lot longer to return than expected, so you're always a little bit more, I guess, concerned about a player coming back like that. Kelsey Clark, I'm going to try and get the video of that because that is a bit of a, well, I say interesting. I do apologise, Kelsey, because I know saying someone's ACL injury is interesting. It can be a bit insensitive, but it was an interesting mechanism because she kind of stepped and then got hit high. So I think she got taken off for a HIA almost, but it ended up being an ACL. So one of those interesting sort of double whammies. Talisha Harden, completely agree with you. I actually, like, I saw the injury happen at the time, but couldn't see much from the sideline, so went back and checked it. There wasn't a whole lot in the mechanism, so I'm not sure what that one was, because I didn't see maybe possibly just a cork impact kind of injury. And then with the HIAs, just wanted to mention those, because there does seem to be quite a high number of HIAs and concussions in the NRLW this year. I haven't tracked it in the past, but, and not that we'll probably get any clarification, because HIA and concussion numbers is like the nation's secrets. They're guarded pretty heavily. But there is some evidence, you know, recently that female athletes are more susceptible to concussion than sports-related concussions than male athletes. So, yeah, just something to keep an eye on, especially with the NRLW sort of growing and growing. We might sort of be looking at a few more concussions and players who have like multiple concussions, which hopefully there can be some work done to try and minimize that.
Well summarized, Brian. That's the wrap up for the week. So we're going to go to Patreon questions. So patreon.com/NRL Physio. We always say that every week. That's where you've got to go if you want to get these questions answered on the weekly on the Magic Sponge. Question number one, Brian. Talking about Ryan Pappenhausen, so his stats from Queensland Cup yesterday, 1 try, 2 try assists, 6 tackle busts, 1 line break, 2 line break assists, 6 goals. You want to froth over that stat line there for Ryan Papps for a little bit? Give us a bit of a froth there.
Mate, I tell you what, I was filthy. I, like, as much as I love seeing my daughter, you know, love the NRLW on Saturday, coming home, sort of getting home and sitting down just as that game was finishing and seeing the stats, I was like, oh man, I could have been there. That was really, really devastating. But went back and watched the highlights, and yeah, look, if we said that he looked about as good as he could have last week without being spectacular, he looked phenomenal on Saturday. I was really, really impressed. So yeah, look, give me more. Like, just give me more of it, James. Yeah. I love seeing this. After 13 months of sitting here talking about setbacks and talking about, you know, we just got to have patience and all that kind of stuff, it's just so good to be talking about, like, he's looking better than expected. He's outdoing our dreams in the right direction, which is great. So yeah, look, getting back in the NRL, I don't think it'll happen quite yet. I still have that sort of around 26, 27, which is kind of what we initially said. I think that's probably more realistic, but he's just looking, yeah, he's looking so good.
Yeah, it's great to see. I don't think there's any more superlatives I want to chuck on the top of that, Brian. I think you've summarized that well, and it's just one of the good stories so far. So hopefully for Ryan Pappenhausen, that keeps building and we can see him in the Melbourne Storm colours, even though I do love seeing him in the Sunny Coast colours because I am a Sunny Coast homer. So bit of a sort of a double-edged sword there for me, unfortunately. Question number two from Patreon here, Brian. So we've got someone who is a dynasty football player. So they own Sam Walker in their dynasty league and he's concerned about the ACL injury. about that going forward. So he's got seven players that he gets to keep each year. So he's listed Isaac Tungo, Talon May, Preston Drinkwater, Dave Fifita, Cam Munster, who are locked in. So he's got six locks in, and he's tossing up between keeping Bateman, Angus Crichton, or Sam Walker for the seventh player. What would you do? What would I do? What are your thoughts on that situation there, Brian? What's your thought on what you do about Bateman, Crichton, or Sam Walker?
We haven't pre-talked about this. I want to throw straight to you because I know you're the biggest Sam Walker fan and you love your draft, as do I, but I think you're a bigger Sam Walker fan than me. I know what I would do. Hit me with what you would do and we'll see if we're the same.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping him. Sam Walker, at the start of this year, I was talking him up as the Queensland 7 in waiting. I think he's clearly very talented. He's clearly just, for whatever reason, had a bad luck run with injury. I still think there's a spot for him at the 7 next year at the Roosters. I don't think he's that out of favour with the system there. You only have to look at how the Roosters ended up this year to see that they're out of the 8 from the outside looking in. He didn't play barely any footy. I think he's got to be in their team next year for them to go well. There's talent, there's goal kicking. The Roosters are always a strong team. They're not going to be in a rebuilding phase for 2-3 years. I think you keep Sam Walker, and he's, what, 20 or 21 as well? I can't recall his exact age. Sorry, off the top of my head. But with that in mind, you've got John Bateman, who's on the wrong side of, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Angus Crichton is always mentioned with a transition to rugby union. He's what's the family connection there with him and the CEO of Rugby Australia? Yeah, so I think there's a sister who's married to one of the high-ranking CEOs at Rugby Australia or something like that. There's some link there with him. He's obviously through the private school system in Sydney as well, through all the junior reps in rugby before he came across to rugby league. I think as good as Angus Crichton is, I don't know about his longevity in rugby league as such, particularly when you've got a Home World Cup coming up. I think that would just be a situation I'd steer clear from. Sam, but you know, John Bateman can always, you know, flick back home. Sam Walker has got to be the guy that you keep there. And if he's not the one you keep, I think I'd be tossing up between him and even maybe, you know, either a Jacob Preston, because I think he can find second rollers. Like, I think they're sort of one come around fairly often. Talon May is probably the other one, but I think Talon May, if he doesn't stick on the Panthers, he'll find another team somewhere and be a very, very good winger. So I think you've got to get Sam Walker in there, at least in that top six, probably seventh at very worst would be my recommendation. Queensland Spirit as well, that always helps that situation too, Brian. What are your thoughts on Sammy Walker? Is he someone you keep?
Mate, I think he is a clear keep. And I'm someone who probably gave this Patreon some concerns by the way I spoke about Sammy Walker and his re-injury risk. I think the big thing here, number one in draft, halfback is the spot that you need, right? Like, you have a good halfback and you're doing really, really well. Sam Walker can be that guy. So there's that component to it. I think you need to keep, and you spoke about it, like second rollers, you can find second rollers. Like, a good halfback doesn't come around all that often. So I think the scarcity of the position plays into it here, number one. Number two, if we look at his injury, you know, risk, I think the highest or the most concern I had about Sam Walker was him coming back this season and not just shutting him down into next year. I know the Roosters are still mathematically in it and now Walker's come back. I haven't heard how he went today, actually, and he's returned to New South Wales Cup, but he came back today, New South Wales Cup. When I'm most concerned about him is for the rest of this season, because if he gets through that okay, he then has a full off-season to rehab really, really hard and bulletproof his knee to a point where he's doing quite well. So heading into next year, if he gets through this season, then starts next season as the Roosters number 7, yes, he's still is at an increased risk of ACL injury, as we've seen from guys like a Matt Lodge. It took Matt Lodge 3 years before he suffered an ACL rupture on his partially torn ACL. So it's not like all of them immediately go out and rupture an ACL. You know, it can take time for that to happen. But the thing is, at the end of the day, at the bare bones, the reason I would keep him is even if you're too, you know, worried about the ACL risk or you had another halfback who's really, really good, you hold on to Sam Walker, wait for him to play 4-6 weeks next season, hopefully he does well, and then you sell him. You sell him for something because he's going to be worth so much more. Like, what's John Bateman's ceiling as a trade piece? Like, John Bateman's not going to come out next year and return like first round or second round investment, and then you can kind of either use him or pass him off to someone else. There is a chance Sam Walker does that. He could come out, Roosters could be going well next year for the first 6 weeks, and you go to somebody who isn't even thinking about his ACL injury. Yeah, here's Sam Walker, give me, you know, Mitch Moses back or something like that. Someone who doesn't have those injury concerns hanging over his head sort of moving forward. So I am, and I don't like Sam Walker nearly as much as you, but I think you absolutely hang on to him.
Yeah, I agree. I also think in that list of players, we talk about Jacob Preston. I'd probably keep Angus Crichton over Jacob Preston if I was in this sort of a scenario as well. I think he's got a pretty good problem to have, where he's got Fifita, Preston, Bateman and Crichton. Like, they're pretty good second rowers there if you're drafting from a dynasty point of view. I know Preston's on the younger side. It just depends on if you feel like Angus Crichton can get back to his, you know, low mid-60 best. Then he's a way better option for you than, you know, Jacob Preston. I know Jacob Preston has been very good this year, but I sort of see him as someone who you're probably going to find pretty replaceable year to year. I just think Angus Crichton, he's had a really interrupted year with obviously the time he spent in sort of rehab there as well. And then he's had the MCL injury. It's been a really disjointed year for him. He's been there, done that at Origin level. He's a big game player. I think he can get back there. But I think, yeah, Sam Walker's just got to be someone that you keep out of those guys we touched on there. And I'm going to be back on him hard next year because I just feel like I'm going to back the talent and I'm going to back what I see. And I think he's going to be very, very good to watch. Question number three, Brian. So the Matildas obviously got home in a cracking game there in the penalty shootout. I think everyone was absolutely stoked when they saw that. We're getting really good vibes. So is it going to be a public holiday after they win the whole thing? I love to hear that for one. I think that's fantastic. Good to see politics and sport getting mixed up again. That's good to see. But did the Matildas get home in that game because they were playing at Suncorp? And was Queensland Spirit the key to them succeeding in the penalty shootout?
Mate, I feel like you have signed up under an alter ego as a patron just for 1 week to ask this question, because this could not be more in your wheelhouse. Look, just quickly, how good were the Tillies? Like, that is, yeah. I'm not a big soccer guy, I'll admit it. You and I get a lot of enjoyment out of sending each other soccer highlights for sure. So we love a good worldy goal for sure. But I'll admit I do struggle to sit through 90 minutes. It's just been a sport that I've never really sort of fully jumped on board with. But I think you cannot deny what the Tillies are doing for the country. You know, you talk about women's sport, but just the country as a whole, they're just a really, really good sporting story and a really good sporting brand. Like my wife was saying today, like, imagine, like, is there any more marketable team in Australian sport? Like, it's just phenomenal. I'm sure it was the same in your household, mate.
Yeah, for sure. I'm up there with the Aussie cricketers as well. I think The Aussie cricketed women just win and win and win and win. And that is, for a person who's been, I guess, spoiled for choice with the men's cricket team winning in their heyday when we were coming up and we just saw, you know, the slip cordon and Steve Waugh sledging everyone and all comers and us just pumping boys at four and over, Shane Warne at one end, McGrath at the other end. To see the women doing similar things is very, very, very good for me. But yeah, I'm massive on the Tillies. I hope they go well for the semi and hopefully the final. It was good to see Suncorp looked absolutely bouncing in a few of the footage that I saw on the socials there. But it would have been a great game to be at, especially for the penalty shootout. I mean, like, how nerve-wracking, but my goodness, good to see.
No, I love it, mate. I cannot be more around it. And when I say I struggled to get through 90 minutes, I have not struggled to get through the last two games that the Matildas played. Mm. So they have got me well on board.
Good areas. We're all behind the Matildas here on the Magic Sponge. Last question from Patreon, Brian, here is, you put a little snippet of a video up earlier the week of a patient with a fairly complex knee injury. And someone chimed in from Patreon and said, oh, that video you posted, is that person okay? Is she looking like she's going to get back to sport and playing sport again?
Yeah, look, I actually had plenty of interest about this, which, I was a bit surprised myself. I had this patient who I've seen many times for, unfortunately, many injuries across her short career. She came in on Thursday or Friday and just walked in, said, yeah, I've just had knee surgery, kind of didn't give me much info, undersold it. And she's like, oh, about halfway through the session, was like, oh, I've got some footage of the injury if you want to see it. And she showed me, and I was like, you are kidding me. Because, yeah, by all intents and purposes, if you saw her out on the street, you wouldn't know she had a knee injury. She was pretty okay. So, yeah, if you haven't seen, head to my socials, scroll back to, I think, Friday. I posted it Friday afternoon. Massive hyperextension, so her knee almost bent, you know, as far back the other direction as it would the normal direction. She does, have some clinical hypermobility there. So she has generally loose joints, I think is probably the best way to describe it to people. So she has loose joints, but for her PCL, ACL, you know, those kind of things to hang on in that situation, she must have some elastic ligaments there too. One of the first questions I asked her was, what are we looking to get you back to? Like, what are you feeling? And she's going to play next year. That's what she wants to do. She's confident. The damage there isn't, you know, end of career stuff. So yeah, look, I was surprised at how good she was so soon after the injury, and not only that, after surgery, like the fact she walked in, you know, no crutches, no brace, doing pretty well. I was like, yeah, once she showed me that footage, I was like, you should thank your lucky stars, buy all the lotto tickets, because yeah, that was pretty crazy. I'm sure even you as a physio sort of, you know, looking at that footage thought similar.
Yeah, pretty traumatic mechanism there, Brian. I think when, I don't know when she showed you the footage when you saw her in person, but I know when you put it up on the socials, I'll preface this by saying there is gastro in our house, but I nearly threw up in my mouth when I saw that mechanism. It was pretty gruesome in terms of a pretty significant hyperextension injury. And when you listed her injuries that she sustained and you said, oh, this is what her function was, it's a pretty incredible story, really. Like, she's obviously got, you know, underlying hypermobility, but she's also made a pretty good stuff to be where she is physically and functionally that far down the track as well. So she's obviously made the right things there, and she's seen the right people like yourself to get her back to things she wants to get back to, which is really, really cool. That's why we do it, isn't it?
Oh, mate, at the end of the day, she's got the best physio going around. You know, that's what held her together. I obviously did that many jumping and landing exercises with her that I bulletproofed her to a point where she can handle hyperextension to about 40 degrees and be unbothered by it. I think that's pretty much my protocol these days.
Yeah, just put that on your LinkedIn profile, just that video. Just be like, check out how good I'm at prehab.
Oh, shit. All right, guys. Look, let's get into our Bundy Mixer picks. Mate, I'm on an absolute heater. I'm very happy to talk about the Bundy Mixer this week. So hit me as our fantasy super coach Bundy Mixer expert. Mate, I cede to you. Hit me with your score, your analysis. Tell me what I need to aim for next week, because yes. I think I'm aiming for the top.
Well, you're moving and shaking there, Brian. So I scored 4.43. I'm on the slide to set second overall now. So my score this week consisted of Georgia Hale and Nathan Cleary getting boosted. So they were pretty sound and pretty solid without being spectacular. But also a little bit disappointing, I went Damian Cook, Olivia Koenig, Hafunga at center from the women's, and then also Latrell. So they, I guess, were only sort of scoring in the mid-40s there. So I didn't really find too many big scores this week in the mix. So I guess in terms of this week coming, I'm sort of in a bit of two minds here of the matchups that I like. I guess in the men's, I like Cowboys at home versus Cronulla on Thursday night. I just think Cowboys off the bye, I just feel like there's points in that team. Cronulla have looked better, but I think that there's still probably a propensity for them to be a little bit leaky, hot potentially. I just think Scott Drinkwater isn't really looking like probably one of the better fullback options for the week. Panthers versus Titans, I guess Cleary's really hard to go past here. I just can't see how you go past Nathan Cleary. NRLW, Simone Taufa is just getting it done. She scored one of the best solo tries you've ever seen on the weekend. Like, that try she scored was unbelievable. I think Isabel Kelly's probably shaping up as a center prospect again. It just feels fairly boring going back to Isabel Kelly, but she just gets it done every week, doesn't she? She's just the best center in the NRLW and probably NRL by quite some distance in terms of this scoring format. So it's sort of one of those ones you like want to look at the point of difference, but you're sort of losing out every time Isabel Kelly just goes big, which is pretty much every week. So sort of not much to sort of get too complicated with there for me. There was a part of me that was like, you know, Do I just get some people that are a bit more hot in there? So I get like a guy like Tino Fasu-Mulawi in the front row forward. Do it, yes, and hot as well to go with it. From the Cowboys on the weekend, Manzelman went the full 70, I think, and she was killing it. She made so many tackles there for the Cowboys against the West Tigers. There, you would have seen her in the flesh there, but she made some really good last-ditch plays, good base statistics there with Manzelman. Obviously, Olivia Koenig and Isabel Kelly speak for themselves, and then maybe going Scotty Drinker or something like that at fullback. Can't go necessarily Reece Walsh this week to go real hot, but there is part of me just thinks, well, maybe if all else is failing, maybe I just get some honeys in there, get some male and female honeys, and make that mix combine and get it happening. How'd you go this week? What was your score?
I got 507, so I am like on a charge. 400, I was ranked 400 in the first week, 200 the next week, 100 the next week. Now I'm ranked 50th, so I'm like halving my rank every week. So as long as the mixer keeps going for like, you know, however many more weeks, I'll be ranked first in time if I keep halving my rank, which is fantastic. I boosted Hale and SJ, went to my boy SJ this week, which was good. He did okay. I think I was tossing up between him and Cleary, and I was stoked after Cleary. He only scored about 50-odd, and I'm thinking, yeah, SJ's going to light it up, but then SJ wasn't goal-kicking. I'm like, oh, God damn it. So SJ, it ended up being like pretty much a wash. For me, I think it's hard to go past Cleary this week. Like, maybe you go back to SJ against Manly, but I think with the, you know, the goal-kicking thing hanging over his head, I think Cleary, I'm going to lock in and boost. To Isabel Kelly point, I've just locked her in. She's just in my team. I know it's boring. It's hard. This is what I want. Like, hopefully the mixer goes a bit bigger next year. You know, even, you know, you pick two or like 10 players or something like that. So a bit more variety, a bit more analysis. That'd be fantastic because, yeah, I do feel like I'm kind of just locking in Georgia Hale and Isabel Kelly at this point in time, and just and even like a Nathan Cleary or Sean Johnson. So hopefully a little bit more, a little bit more variety there. But it was really, really good to see in the Cowboys. Our friend of the show, Shania Power, she looked fantastic in real life, was putting hits on like you wouldn't believe. That was really fantastic. So she's trying to win her way back into my team again next week. But yeah, just killing it, mate. So I'm loving the mixer. I'm on the charge. I'm not so much on the charge in Supercoach. So hit me with your score. We'll quickly run through our moves, even though we've only both got one trade left.
Yeah, like you said, only the one trade to go, Brian, so not too much to talk about here. I was 12.42 this week, which seems pretty much par. I think seems like nearly every team's in and around that sort of a score this week, so I guess not super stoked, not Devo about it. Captain Latrell Mitchell, which really wasn't a massive gain on what Kalen Ponga scored, so when I was sort of looking at who to line up for Sion, I just thought most people would be leaning towards Ponga. I just thought, well, if the Bunnies are going to do it, they better do it soon, but they haven't really done it. So I was a bit miffed about that with Latrell not going so well. I think shout out to Dane Gagai, who delivered the goods yet again. So he scored over 100 this week for the Knights. Did anyone see him becoming an absolute super coach weapon at age 32 when he historically has never been a high scoring super coach player? It's amazing to me to see how good his season's been up into the last few weeks since I've owned him. It sort of makes you wonder about where he'll be sort of ranked next year and where you'd be sort of more comfortable taking him next year potentially. But that's where I was sort of at for that week. I've still got one trade up my sleeve. No real need to make that at this point in time, Brian. So I'm just going to sit tight and just see what happens for the weeks that are coming. How'd you go?
Yeah, I just had a look. I don't know if you check your app, you might have gained a few extra points. But I went up. I was 12.21 when we started the show. I'm now 12.53, so just slowly creeping up the board. I think it's probably a little bit below par for where I'm ranked, so I might slide a little bit. But Captain Ponga, solid without being spectacular. I think a lot of my players were sort of in between, you know, 55 and 70. I've still got one trade left. I've avoided any sort of major issues. Like, I haven't had any big injuries come out, like a Moses or even like an Adenfano or Blake, those kind of guys. So yeah, I'll keep holding that and plan to probably use it when I have a whole bunch of bunnies out the week after. Might go on Alex Johnson to a, you know, center wing pod to try and get me a few points in the last couple of weeks. But, yeah, look, apart from that, I think that's a wrap for this week, mate. As always, if you like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend. If you want more info like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio is your place to go. James, I know there's a bit of sickness floating around your house, so I really appreciate you coming on a Sunday night, mate. Feel better. Pass on my best to your lovely children and your wonderful wife, and I'll talk to you next Sunday, hopefully. As much as we'll be talking about the footy and we'll be excited about that, hopefully we're talking about the Matildas in the World Cup final. Would be awesome.
Yeah. That would be something to behold. And I think good luck to the girls. It's good to see what they're doing. And I just can't be more stoked for them, to be honest. Like you said, they're just a team you just can get around, aren't they? I think the whole country's behind them. So hopefully they get it going and keep it going.
Love it, guys. All right, have a good week, and up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.